Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
One of the most interesting football players ever to don a helmet, Joe Namath, is our topic today of the great Hall of Fame career that he had, both at high school, college, and professional level. I guarantee you that this may be one of the best Hall of Fame stories you've ever heard. Joe Willie Namath and his promise, coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we are going to look at another one of our great Hall of Famers from the Pro Football Hall of Fame that just is an outstanding player and another product of Western Pennsylvania. You know how I like to promote those, as we try to do at least one every week. Now, there are very few people in the world that can be a hometown hero in Pittsburgh area, bring the crowds to their feet with applause in Alabama, and attract the respect and admiration of the folks in New York City. But Joseph William Namath did all three of these places and made all the fans proud and respect him so much. His gridiron nicknames reflect how much the player was admired, the Hungarian Howitzer, Joe Willie, and Broadway Joe were all monikers that teammates, the press, and fans alike knew the young, talented athlete to be called by. Now, Joe was the son of a hardworking steel worker in Western PA, and a tough labor and hard-nosed football seemed to go hand-in-hand in that area. Now, he grew up and eventually attended Beaver Falls High School, where he played baseball, basketball, and, of course, football. Now, on the hard courts, he was an exciting player to watch, and on occasion, the uber athlete would dunk, as this was long before it was a popular thing to do in a game. Joe stood about 6'2" when in his playing days, so I'm assuming he had to be pretty close to that then. So he had a little bit of leap to his step, and he could get up in the air a little bit, you know, especially at the high school level. Now, Namath excelled on the diamond of hardball, too. A strong enough prospect that he was once offered $50,000 in a bonus by the Chicago Cubs to sign into their farm system. Now, the Cubs and five other teams were recruiting him relentlessly from the MLB, and he always had the dream of playing alongside his childhood idol, Roberto Clemente, on the Pirates. This is the early 60s, remember, when he was playing in high school. Now, he strongly considered pursuing that, too, by inking a deal with the Pittsburgh Baseball Club until a higher power stepped in. His mother. She insisted that her son not sign into a baseball playing and get into college and get a college education. But hey, this is a football website, so enough about talking about basketball and baseball. Let's talk about Joe Namath, the football player. Now, he was a gridiron star as a senior, and he led Beaver Falls to a 9-0 record and a state championship. And when he thought the baseball scouts were hard after him, he thought differently when the college football recruiters started honing in on him. At first, Namath thought he would like to play at Notre Dame, and he quickly changed his mind when he found out it was not a co-ed school. After all, Joe liked the ladies. The South Bend school did not change that policy until 1972. And I find it interesting that the records show that Beaver Falls won a state championship, because Pennsylvania did not really have a formal playoff system to elect state championships. So I'm guessing that it was either a self-proclaimed or maybe a press-proclaimed championship for Beaver Falls that year. Not saying they weren't good, just saying there wasn't a formal playoff system like there is now in the state. But that didn't happen until probably in the late 80s, early 1990s. Now, Joe was also interested in the University of Maryland besides Notre Dame, but his scores on the college board exams were a little bit under what the people at Maryland were looking for. Their recruitment connection paid off, though, as Maryland's head coach, Tom Nugent at the time, was a pretty good friend of Paul Bear Bryant of Alabama, and he put in a good word for Namath there. Now, Coach Bryant was extremely interested in the prospect and sent his top man, assistant coach Howard Schellenberger, that name's familiar, to visit Namath and his household. Now, Schellenberger, if you remember, ended up going to the University of Miami and started quarterback U there. I believe he was like Jim Kelly and Bernie Kosar's coach at Miami. Maybe not Kosar, but definitely Jim Kelly in the early 80s. So very good eye for talent there in Howard Schellenberger. And it's kind of interesting to note that Bear Bryant sort of, Alabama, maybe it wasn't Bryant, but Alabama didn't have the same standards that Maryland had, which kind of surprises me of getting in with your college board exams. Now, when this time came for Schellenberger to leave, he must have done quite the sales job in recruitment because Mama Namath was on board and convinced that Alabama was the place for her son to play. Joe Namath arrived in Alabama in 1961, not quite sure of what to expect. Now, Coach Bryant was hard on a young freshman. He was constantly talking to them and working on them to know what to expect of winning football. And that's hard work and being in shape and doing your calisthenics and drills and running and being, you know, just being the best that you possibly could be and knowing all your plays like the back of your hand. And he drilled it into them hard. That's what Bear Bryant was known for his entire coaching career, not only at Alabama, but places before that as well. Now, the other interesting thing in 1961 of a man going from Western Pennsylvania down to Alabama was the racial tensions of the time. You know, the civil rights movement was, you know, getting into full swing in 1961. A lot of problems, especially in the South. And Namath came from Beaver Falls, which has a pretty good size you know, black community in it, even back in the late 50s and 60s. So, you know, it wasn't like Namath was, you know, strange to knowing folks of color. But he did not know of people treating them as badly and poorly as they did in the South. The tensions were very hostile there toward in the races, not quite the same up in Pennsylvania where he came through. So it was quite a shock to his system with that too. Now, as a sophomore, Namath became a starting quarterback for Alabama, and he led the team to a 10-1 record and shut out over Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl. Now, the 1962 season would actually be Namath's best statistically. He passed for 1,192 yards, 13 touchdowns, and had only 8 interceptions. The Hungarian howitzer also rushed the ball 70 times for 229 yards and 4 scores. Now, Coach Bear Bryant used the arm and legs of his signal caller to help guide the Tide to win the national championship in 1963, as they went 9-2 in that season, and he passed for 765 yards, 7 touchdowns, and 7 picks to go along with 201 rushing yards and 5 scores. You know, remember, that's an era of running the ball, you know, 5 yards in a cloud of dust. Now, Namath would still be the guy that would go in and raise a little cane, you know, every once in a while, even with the strictness of Bryant and his curfews. But late in the 1963 season, he was caught breaking that curfew of Bryant, and he led his teammates out on a little binge and having a little bit of fun, and that led Coach Bryant to suspend Namath for the regular season finale against Miami, as well as the Sugar Bowl against Ole Miss. Quite a punishment there. Well, Namath returned to action for his senior year in 1964, and he would throw for 756 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 5 picks, and Joe also added 133 yards rushing and 6 touchdowns. Later in the season, while preparing for the Orange Bowl game against Texas, Joe had injured his bad knee for a third time. That's why his numbers were down, especially his junior and senior year. He was having a little bit of knee issues with that right knee. And it was no easy decision, but Coach Bryant thought it best to keep the quarterback sidelined for the bowl game. You know, so that's 2 bowl games in a row that the best quarterback in Alabama was not starting. That's Joe Namath. The dire consequences call for extraordinary measures, however, and by the end of the second quarter, the Tide were down 14-0, and Bear Bryant went to the bullpen and put Namath into the game. It didn't take long to see the fruitful results of that decision by Bryant, as Namath soon found Wayne Trimble for a touchdown to cut the Longhorns' lead to the score. Now, Namath would be named the game's most valuable player for his remarkable performance coming off the bench. However, Despite his best efforts, Alabama would end up losing that game 21-17 in a thriller for the second half. Quite an excitement there as soon as Namath came in. The good news for Bama, though, was at the time, the national championship was awarded at the end of the college regular season. So the Tide, with their regular season mark of 10-0, was given the college football title of the NCAA before they even played Texas. So I'm sure the fans in Longhorn territory were not real happy about that. Now, Namath finished his Bama career with 2,713 yards passing, 24 touchdowns, 20 interceptions, 563 yards rushing, and 15 rushing TDs as he posted a 29-4 record during his 3 years as a starter. Many years later, Bryant would call Namath the greatest athlete I ever coached, unquote. Now, Joe soon went pro. Despite having that shaky knee, and teams of the NFL and the AFL were very interested in signing this brash quarterback from Alabama. Remember, the AFL had just started out just a few years earlier. They were in competition with the NFL for talent. Now, Joe went high in both professional football league drafts as he was selected by the St. Louis Cardinals of the NFL and the New York Jets of the American Football League. Namath was easily swayed through the bright light of New York City, as well as a three-year, $427,000 contract the Jets offered him, a record at the time. The contract amount was scoffed by many in the NFL's older experts, such as Coach Vince Lombardi and some of the guys that owned the teams. They said that's way too much to be paying a football player. And the Jets' position, though, was summed up by owner Sonny Werblin, who soon after inking the deal with Namath said, quote, "Namath has the presence of a star. You know how a real star lights up the room when he comes in? Joe has that quality," end quote. He might be pretty right, because Joe is definitely a big personality. Now, Namath's arrival in New York has huge news, and Namath appeared on the cover of the July 1965 issue of Sports Illustrated magazine with Broadway behind him in the heading, quote, "Football goes showbiz," unquote. And the same day the Sports Illustrated issue hit the newsstands, Namath was at practice. He took quite a ribbing from his new teammates on the Jets, which gave birth to the nickname of Broadway Joe, one he still has to this day. Now, he says, quote, "We were in the locker room that day. The magazine came out, and the offensive tackle, Sherman Plunkett, looked at it, kind of shook his head a little and said, 'There goes Broadway Joe,' and it stuck," Namath told reporters in 1969. In his rookie year, Jets coach Webb Eubank took his time developing Namath, who would only start 9 games for the 5-8-1 team. Early in the season, clipboard holding did him some good too, as when it did come time, he was able to help and deliver 5 wins of his 6 starts, after that 0-6 start for the Jets, and he passed for 2,220 yards, 18 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. Now, Broadway Joe was voted to the first 4 AFL All-Star games after the year, and was also named the AFL's Rookie of the Year in 1965. In 1966, Namath was named the Jets starter that season. He threw for over 3,300 yards, which led the American Football League, 19 touchdowns was he tossed from his arm. And however, the gunslinger style led him to leading the AFL in interceptions too, with 27, as the Jets were sort of a mediocre at 6-6-2 on that season. Now, the Jets improved to an 8-5-1 record in 67, while Namath torched opponents for a career-high 4,007 passing yards and 26 touchdowns, but he still turned the ball over at an alarming rate with 28 interceptions. It was the first time that a professional quarterback would pass for over 4,000 yards in a season by any organized pro football league, including the NFL. And that record would stand all the way through the 1979 season, when San Diego's Dan Fouts passed for 4,082 games in a 16-game season. Namath did it, I believe, in 14 games. His fame grew from football, and Broadway Joe was living up to his reputation off the field too, as he loved the nightlife in the Big Apple and had a mutual admiration for the young ladies. He was an eligible bachelor and considered by many to be just a flashy playboy. Had many commercials, had many photos of him in fur coats, pantyhose commercials with young ladies, by his side. Just, I believe he had some men's cologne commercials as well. Now, 1968 saw the progression of Namath and the Jets as a solid team and brought hope to the New York area and the AFL faithful. Namath once again passed for over 3,000 yards, 15 touchdowns, and 17 interceptions in 68. And it was also a slow start, though, after the first five games of the 68 season. New York was barely above 500 with a 3-2 record. And they got a hot hand as they figured things out and lost only once more that whole season. In the AFL Championship, the Jets outlasted the Oakland Raiders 27-23 as Namath threw a touchdown pass in that game. And with the victory, it was on to Super Bowl III in Miami to face the best team that season, the Baltimore Colts in the NFL. Now, during his days leading up to that game, the media had utterly given the Colts the game and the title already. You know, Baltimore was a machine and a more mature NFL and, you know, a much stronger NFL than surely the AFL is. You know, surely Don Shula's team would grind up the upstart AFL's best, much like Green Bay had in the first two Super Bowl title games prior since the merged postseason events. Now, it was the Jets' 11-3 record in a soft-regarded AFL against the Colts' 13-1 impressive NFL record against some really good teams, or so people thought. A few days before the Super Bowl, one of the media floated a question out to the Jets' QB, who was lounging by a pool at the Miami Touchdown Club, surrounded by reporters, and the Jets about the Jets' chances of winning against Baltimore. Growing weary of the same question time after time for days on end, on the same topic in, you know, the days leading up, Namath had enough and made one of the most famous quoted lines in professional football history. He said, quote, "We're going to win Sunday, I guarantee you," unquote. Namath declared to the media, and it was considered almost a joke by the public, but it was played probably on every sports news channel that there was. I mean, the sports section of the news. There were no dedicated sports channels back then, but, you know, all these public news things, and every newspaper carried it. As the Jets, you know, they weren't too far off, because they knew a secret that nobody else did about the Colts' defense. They realized during a film study that Baltimore stayed in their base defense no matter what during the 1968 season. Coach Webb Eubank and Namath both did not believe the Baltimore secondary could keep up with the Jets receivers in base defense. They took advantage of this knowledge, and by halftime of the Super Bowl, the score was 7-0 in favor of New York. I'm sure there was shock and awe, and the people that were betting on the game were really nervous. Well, they really got even more nervous when the Jets padded the lead, making it 16-0 shortly into the fourth quarter. The Jets defense had some surprises of their own in thwarting the Colts offense. After throwing three interceptions in a contest, Baltimore starting quarterback Earl Morrall was replaced by longtime Colt Johnny Unitas. The veteran QB took the helm and promptly marched his team down the field and scored a touchdown. However, it was a little bit too much, too little, too late, and the Jets became the world champs as they won the game 16-7, and Namath swallowed up from view in the field as a horde of media, teammates, and excited fans charged towards the quarterback when the gun sounded to celebrate the monumental victory. It was a watershed moment as it gave the AFL some respect and gained more equal footing with the old guard teams of the NFL, ushering in a newly merged NFL composed of the AFC and NFC, all those teams would go into. Now, Joe finished the game passing with 206 yards and had an 83.3 passing quarterback rating as he was named the game's MVP, and he also had the distinction of being the first quarterback to win a college national championship and a Super Bowl. This is the high watermark of the career of Joe Namath. He played for the Jets through the 1976 season and one final one as a member of the LA Rams roster. But because of injuries and personal issues, he never did regain the flamboyant form he had in 1968. And although he did lead the NFL in passing in 1972 with a shadow of his former self, with just 2,816 yards passing. Now, one of the issues that he was battling was one that he came to a head with the NFL brass over who he hung around with. You know, Namath resigned, actually, from football on June 6, 1969, after NFL Commissioner Pete Rozelle told Namath that he must sell his share in a stake of a bar ownership. This occurred 5 months after Broadway Joe was awarded a Super Bowl III MVP trophy. Rozelle referenced the media reports that the bar was frequented by, quote, mafia associates, end quote, and he was not giving in the best interest of the NFL. Namath quitting stunned everybody, including the commish, in late June and early July. Meetings between NFL execs and Namath and his court proved to be fruitful, as eventually Namath sold his stake in that bar and played with the Jets once again in the 1969 season. Now, in his 13-year pro career, Joe Namath finished with a 62-63-4 record as a starter, had 27,663 yards passing, 173 touchdowns, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined this great quarterback, number 12, Joe Namath of the Jets, into the class of 1985, into their museum, the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. So, you know, that is a great bit of history, another great Western Pennsylvania contribution to football, and just an all-around fun player and a fun person to be around. Still lights up a room today, even many decades after his playing days. Very entertaining guy. So, Joe Namath, what a great Hall of Famer you are, and thank you for all that great things that you did. Hope you enjoyed this little bit of history. Hope you'll join us each and every day for more football history on Pigskin Dispatch. Till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.